Metamorphosis, written by Franz Kafka. One morning, when Gregor Samsa woke from troubled dreams, he found himself transformed in his bed into a horrible vermin. He lay on his armor-like back, and if he lifted his head a little, he could see his brown belly slightly domed and divided by arches into stiff sections. The bedding was hardly able to cover it, and seemed ready to slide off any moment. His many legs, pitifully thin compared with the size of the rest of him, waved about helplessly as he looked. "What's happened to me?" he thought. It wasn't a dream. His room, a proper human room, although a little too small, lay peacefully between its four familiar walls. A collection of textile samples laid spread out on the table. Samsa was a traveling salesman. And above it, there hung a picture that he had recently cut out of an illustrated magazine and housed in a nice gilded frame. It showed a lady fitted out with a fur hat and a fur boa. She sat upright, raising a heavy fur muff that covered the whole of her lower arm towards the viewer. Gregor then turned to look out the window at the dull weather. Drops of rain could be heard hitting the pane, which made him feel quite sad. "How about if I sleep a little longer and forget all this nonsense?" he thought. But that was something he was unable to do, because he was used to sleeping on his right, and in his present state, couldn't get into that position. However hard he threw himself onto his right, he always rolled back to where he was. He must have tried it 100 times, shut his eyes so that he wouldn't have to look at the floundering legs, and only stopped when he began to feel a mild, dull pain that he had never felt before. "Oh God," he thought, "what a strenuous career I've chosen. Traveling day in and day out. Doing business like this takes much more effort than doing your own business at home. And on top of that, there's the curse of traveling. Worries about making train connections, bad and irregular food, contact with different people all the time so that you can never get to know anyone or become friendly with them. It can all go to hell." He felt a slight itch up on his belly, pushed himself slowly up on his back towards the headboard so that he could lift his head better, found where the itch was, and saw that it was covered with lots of little white spots which he didn't know what to make of. When he tried to feel the place with one of his legs, he drew it quickly back, because as soon as he touched it, he was overcome by a cold shudder. He slid back into his former position. "Getting up early all the time," he thought, "it makes you stupid. You've got to get enough sleep. Other traveling salesmen live a life of luxury. For instance, whenever I go back to the guest house during the morning to copy out the contract, these gentlemen are always still sitting there eating their breakfasts. I ought to just try that with my boss. I'd get kicked out on the spot. But who knows? Maybe that would be the best thing for me. If I didn't have my parents to think about, I'd have given my notice a long time ago. I'd have gone up to the boss and told him just what I think, let him know just what I feel. He'd fall right off his desk. And it's a funny sort of business to be sitting up there at your desk, talking down at your subordinates from up there, especially when you have to go right up close to his face because the boss is hard of hearing. Well, there's still some hope. Once I have the money together to pay off my parents' debt to him, another 5 or 6 years, I suppose, that's definitely what I'll do. That's when I'll make the big change. First of all, though, I've got to get up. My train leaves at 5. He looked over at the alarm clock ticking on the chest of drawers. God in heaven, he thought, it was 6:30, and the hands were continuing to move forwards. It was even later than 6:30, more like 6:45. Had the alarm clock not rung? He could see from the bed that it had been set for 4:00 as it should have been. It certainly must have rung. Yes, but was it possible to sleep through the furniture-rattling ring of the clock? True, he had not slept peacefully, but probably all the more deeply because of that. What should he do now? The next train went at 7. If he were to catch that, he would have to rush like mad, and the collection of samples was still not packed. More importantly, he did not feel particularly fresh and lively. Even if he did catch the train, he would not avoid his boss's anger. The office assistant would have been there to see the 5 o'clock train go, and would have already filed his report about Gregor's not being there a long time ago. The office assistant was the boss's man, spineless and with no understanding. What about if he reported sick? But that would be extremely artificial and suspicious, since in 15 years of service, Gregor had never once been ill. His boss would certainly come around with the doctor from the medical insurance company, accuse his parents of having a lazy son, and accept the doctor's recommendation not to make any claim, as the doctor believed that no one was ever ill, but instead were slothful and work-shy. What's more, would he have been entirely wrong in this case? Gregor did, in fact, apart from excessive sleepiness after sleeping for so long, feel completely well, and even felt much hungrier than usual. He was still hurriedly thinking all this through, unable to decide to get out of the bed, when the clock struck 7:15. There was a cautious knock at the door near his head. "Gregor," somebody called. It was his mother. "It's 7:15. Didn't you want to go somewhere?" That gentle voice. Gregor was shocked when he heard his own voice answering. It could hardly be recognized as the voice he had had before. As if from deep inside him, there was a painful and uncontrollable squeaking mixed in with it. The words could have been made out at first, but then there was a sort of echo which made them unclear, leaving the hearer unsure whether he had heard properly or not. Gregor had wanted to give a full answer and explain everything, but in the circumstances, contented himself with saying, "Yes, Mother, yes, thank you. I'm getting up now." The change in Gregor's voice probably could not be noticed outside through the wooden door, as his mother was satisfied with this explanation and shuffled away. But this short conversation made the other members of the family aware that Gregor, against their expectations, was still at home. Soon his father came knocking at the door, gently, but with his fist. "Gregor, Gregor," he called. "What's wrong?" After a short while, he called again with a warning deepness in his voice. "Gregor, Gregor." Then his sister came plaintively. "Gregor, aren't you well? Do you need anything?" Gregor answered, "I'm ready now," making an effort to remove all the strangeness from his voice by enunciating very carefully and putting long pauses between each individual word. His father went back to his breakfast, but his sister whispered, "Gregor, open the door, I beg of you." Gregor, however, had no thought of opening the door, and instead congratulated himself for his cautious habit acquired from his traveling of locking all doors at night, even when he was at home. The first thing he wanted to do was to get up in peace without being disturbed, to get dressed, and most of all, to have his breakfast. Only then would he consider what to do next, as he was well aware that he could not come to any sensible conclusion by lying in bed. He remembered that he had often felt a slight pain in bed, perhaps caused by lying awkwardly, but that had always turned out to be pure imagination. He wondered how his imaginings would resolve themselves today. He did not have the slightest doubt that the change in his voice was nothing more than the first sign of a serious cold, which was an occupational hazard for traveling salesmen. It was a simple matter to throw off the covers. He only had to blow himself up a little, and they fell off by themselves. But it became difficult after that, especially as he was so exceptionally broad. He could have used his arms and his hands to push himself up, but instead of hands and legs, he only had little legs constantly moving uncontrollably in different directions. He wanted to bend one of his legs to stretch it out. When he finally managed to do that, the rest of his legs would move about painfully. "This is something that can't be done in bed," Gregor said to himself, "so don't keep trying to do it." The first thing he wanted to do was get the lower part of his body out of the bed, but he had never seen the lower part of his body and could not imagine what it looked like. It turned out to be too hard to move. It moved too slowly. Finally, almost in a frenzy, he carelessly shoved himself forwards with all the force he could gather. Unfortunately, he chose the wrong direction and hit hard against the lower bedpost. He learned from the burning pain he felt that the lower part of his body might well be the most sensitive. Then he tried to get the top part of his body out of the bed first, carefully turning his head to the side. This he easily managed. Despite its breadth and its weight, the bulk of his body eventually followed slowly in the direction of the head. When he finally got his head out of the bed and into the fresh air, it occurred to him that if he let himself fall, it would be a miracle if he did not injure his head and stop pushing himself forward in the same way. He did not want to knock himself out at any price, so it was better to stay in bed than lose consciousness. It took just as much effort to get back to where he had been earlier. As he lay there sighing and watched his legs struggle against each other even harder than before, if that was possible, he could not think of a way of bringing peace and order to this chaos. He told himself once more that it was not possible for him to stay in bed, and that the most sensible thing to do would be to get out of bed in whatever way he could, and at whatever sacrifice. At the same time, though, he did not forget to remind himself that calm consideration was better than rushing to desperate conclusions. At times like this, he would direct his eyes to the window and look out as clearly as he could. Unfortunately, the view of the other side of the narrow street was enveloped in morning fog, provoking little confidence. 7 o'clock already, he said to himself when the clock struck again. 7 o'clock, and there's still a fog like this. He lay there quietly a while longer, breathing lightly, as if he expected the total stillness to bring things back to their real and natural state. Then he said to himself, "Before it strikes 7:15, I'll definitely have to get out of bed. By then, somebody will have come around from work to ask what's happened to me, since they open up at work before 7 o'clock. And so, he set himself to the task of swinging the entire length of his body out of the bed all at the same time. If he succeeded in falling out of bed and kept his head raised as he did so, he could probably avoid injuring it. His back seemed to be quite hard, and probably nothing would happen to it falling onto the carpet. His main concern was for the loud noise he was bound to make, and even though buffered by all the doors, it still would probably raise concern, if not alarm. But it was something that had to be risked. When Gregor was sticking halfway out of the bed, the new method became more of a game than an effort, since all he had to do was rock back and forth. Still, it occurred to him how simple everything would be if somebody came to help him. 2 strong people, he had his father and the maid in mind, would have been more than enough. They would only have to push their arms under the dome of his back, peel him away from the bed, bend down with the load, and then be patient and careful as he swung over onto the floor, where hopefully the little legs would find a use. Should he really call for help, though, even apart from the fact that all the doors were locked? Despite all the difficulty he was in, he could not suppress a smile at this thought. After a while, he had moved so far across that it would have been hard for him to keep his balance if he rocked too hard. The time was now 7:10, and he would have to make a final decision very soon. There was a ring at the door of the flat. "That will be someone from work," he said to himself, and froze very still, although his legs only became all the more lively as they danced around. For a moment, everything remained quiet. "They're not opening the door," Gregor said to himself, caught in some nonsensical hope. But then, of course, the maid's firm steps went to the door as always and opened it. Gregor only needed to hear the visitor's first words of greeting, and he knew who it was, the chief clerk himself. Why did Gregor have to be the only one condemned to work for a company where they immediately became highly suspicious at the slightest shortcoming? Were all employees, every one of them, louts? Was there not one of them who was faithful and devoted, who would go so mad with pangs of conscience that he couldn't get out of bed if he didn't spend at least a couple of hours in the morning on company business? Wasn't it not enough to let one of the trainees make inquiries, assuming inquiries were even necessary? Did the chief clerk have to come himself? Did they have to show the whole innocent family that his behavior was so suspicious that only the chief clerk could be trusted to have the wisdom to investigate it? And more because these thoughts had made him upset than through any proper decision, he swung himself with all his force out of the bed. There was a loud thump, but it really wasn't a loud noise. His fall was softened by the carpet, and Gregor's back was also more elastic than he had thought, which made the sound muffled and not too noticeable. He had not held his head carefully enough, though, and hit it as he fell. Annoyed and in pain, he turned it and rubbed it against the carpet. "Something's fallen down in there," said the chief clerk in the room on the left. Gregor tried to imagine whether the strange thing that had happened to him today could ever happen to the chief clerk, too. You had to concede that it was possible. But as if in gruff reply to this question, the chief clerk's firm footsteps in his highly polished boots could now be heard in the adjoining room. From the room on his right, Gregor's sister whispered to him to let him know, "Gregor, the chief clerk is here." "Yes, I know," said Gregor to himself, but without daring to raise his voice loud enough for his sister to hear him. "Gregor," said his father, now from the room to his left, "the chief clerk has come around and wants to know why you didn't leave on the early train. We don't know what to say to him, and anyway, he wants to speak to you personally. So please, open up this door. I'm sure he'll be good enough to forgive the untidiness of your room." Then the chief clerk called, "Good morning, Mr. Samsa." "He isn't well," said his mother to the chief clerk, while his father continued to speak through the door. "He isn't well, please believe me. Why else would Gregor have missed a train? The lad only thinks about the business. It nearly makes me cross the way he never goes out in the evenings. He's been in town for a week now, but stayed home every evening. He sits with us in the kitchen and just reads the paper or studies train timetables. His idea of relaxation is working with his fret saw. He's made a little frame, for instance. It only took him 2 or 3 evenings. You'll be amazed how nice it is. It's hanging up in his room. You'll see it as soon as Gregor opens the door. Anyway, I'm glad you're here. We wouldn't have been able to get Gregor to open the door by ourselves. He's so stubborn. And I'm sure he isn't well. He said this morning that he is, but he isn't." "I'll be there in a moment," said Gregor slowly and thoughtfully, but without moving, so that he could not miss any word of the conversation. "Well, I can't think of any other way of explaining it, Mrs. Samsa," said the chief clerk. "I hope it's nothing serious. But on the other hand, I must say that when we people in commerce become slightly sick, then fortunately or unfortunately, as you like, we simply have to overcome it because of business considerations." "Can the chief clerk come in and see you now?" asked the father impatiently, knocking at the door again. "No," said Gregor. In the room on his right, there followed a painful silence. In the room on his left, his sister began to cry. So why did his sister not go and join the others? She had probably only just gotten up and had not even begun to get dressed. And why was she crying? Was it because he had not gotten up, or had not let the chief clerk in, because he was in danger of losing his job? And if that happened, his boss would once more pursue their parents with the same demands as before. There was no need to worry about things like that yet. Gregor was still there, and did not have the slightest intention of abandoning his family. For the time being, he just lay there on the carpet. And would anyone who knew the condition he was in seriously have expected him to let the chief clerk in? It was only a minor discourtesy, and a suitable excuse could easily be found for it later. Besides, it was not something that Gregor could be sacked for on the spot. It seemed much more sensible to Gregor to leave him in peace instead of disturbing him with talking at him and crying. But the others didn't know what was happening. They were worried that would excuse their behavior. The chief clerk now raised his voice. "Mr. Samsa," he called to him, "what is wrong? You barricade yourself in your room. Give us no more than yes or no for an answer. You are causing serious and unnecessary concern to your parents. And you fail, and I mention this just by the way, you fail to carry out your business duties in a way that is quite unheard of. I'm speaking here on behalf of your parents and of your employer, and really must request a clear and immediate explanation. I am astonished, quite astonished. I thought I knew you as a calm and sensible person, and now you suddenly seem to be showing off with peculiar whims. This morning, your employer did suggest a possible reason for your failure to appear. It's true. It had to do with the money that was recently entrusted to you. But I came near to giving him my word of honor that that would not be the right explanation. But now that I see your incomprehensible stubbornness, I no longer feel any wish whatsoever to intercede on your behalf. Nor is your position all that secure. I had originally intended to say all this to you in private, but since you caused me to waste my time here for no good reason, I don't see why your parents should not also hear it. Your turnover has been very unsatisfactory lately. I grant you that it's not the time of year to do especially good business. We recognize that. But there simply is no time of the year to do no business at all, Mr. Samsa. We cannot allow there to be." "But sir," called Gregor, beside himself, and forgetting all else in the excitement, "I'll open up immediately. Just a moment. I'm slightly unwell. An attack of dizziness. I haven't been able to get up. I'm still in bed now. I'm quite fresh again now, though. I'm just getting out of bed. Just a moment. Be patient. It's not as easy as I thought. I'm all right now, though. It's shocking what can suddenly happen to a person. I was quite all right last night. My parents know about it. Perhaps better than me. I had a small symptom of it last night already. They must have noticed it. I don't know why I didn't let you know at work. But you always think you can get over an illness without staying at home. Please, don't make my parents suffer. There's no basis for any of the accusations you're making. Nobody's ever said a word to me about any of these things. Maybe you haven't read the latest contracts I sent in. I'll set off with the 8 o'clock train as well. These few hours of rest have given me strength. I'll be in the office soon after you, and please be so good as to tell that to the boss and recommend me to him." While Gregor gushed out these words, hardly knowing what he was saying, he made his way over to the chest of drawers. This was easily done, probably because of the practice he had already had in bed. where he now tried to upright himself. He really did want to open the door. He really did want to let them see him and to speak with the chief clerk. The others were being so insistent, and he was curious to learn what they would say when they caught sight of him. If they were shocked, then it would no longer be Gregor's responsibility, and he could rest. If, however, they took everything calmly, he would still have no reason to be upset. And if he hurried, he really could be at the station for 8 o'clock. The first few times he tried to climb up on the smooth chest of drawers, he just slid down again. He finally gave himself one last swing and stood there upright. The lower part of his body was in serious pain, but he no longer paid attention to it. Now he let himself fall against the back of a nearby chair and held tightly to its edges with his little legs. By now, he had also calmed down and kept quiet so that he could listen to what the chief clerk was saying. "Did you understand a word of all that?" the chief clerk asked his parents. "Surely he's not trying to make fools of us." "Oh, God," called his mother, who was already in tears. "He could be seriously ill, and we're making him suffer." "Greta, Greta," she then cried. "Mother," his sister called from the other side. They communicated across Gregor's room. "You'll have to go for the doctor right away. Gregor is ill. Quick, get the doctor." "Did you hear the way Gregor spoke just now?" "That was the voice of an animal," said the chief clerk, with a calmness that was in contrast with his mother's screams. "Anna, Anna," his father called into the kitchen through the entrance hall, clapping his hands. "Get a locksmith here now." The two girls, their skirts swishing, immediately ran out through the hall, wrenching open the front door of the flat as they went. How had his sister managed to get dressed so quickly? There was no sound of the door banging shut again. They must have left it open. People often do in homes where something awful has happened. Gregor, in contrast, had become much calmer, so they couldn't understand his words anymore, although they seemed clear to him, clearer than before. Perhaps his ears had become used to the sound. They had realized, though, that there was something wrong with him, and were ready to help. The first response to a situation had been confident and wise, and that made him feel better. He felt that he had been drawn back in among people, and from the doctor and the locksmith, he expected great and surprising achievements, although he did not really distinguish one from the other. Whatever was said next would be crucial, so in order to make his voice as clear as possible, he coughed a little, but taking care not to do this too loudly, since even this might sound different from the way that a human coughs, and he was no longer sure he could judge it for himself. Meanwhile, it had become very quiet in the next room. Perhaps his parents were sitting at the table whispering with the chief clerk, or perhaps they were all pressed against the door and listening. Gregor slowly pushed his way over to the door with the chair. Once there, he let go of it and threw himself onto the door, holding himself upright against it, using the adhesive on the tips of his legs. He rested there a little while to recover from the effort involved, and then set himself to the task of turning the key in the lock with his mouth. He seemed, unfortunately, to have no teeth. Then how was he going to grasp the key? But the lack of teeth was, of course, made up for with a very strong jaw. Using the jaw, he was able to start the key turning, ignoring the fact that he must have been causing some kind of damage, since a brown fluid came from his mouth, flowed over the key, and dripped onto the floor. "Listen," said the chief clerk in the next room, "he's turning the key." Gregor was greatly encouraged by this. They all should have been calling to him, his father and his mother too. "Well done, Gregor." They should have cried, "Keep at it! Keep hold of the lock!" With the idea that they were all excitedly following his efforts, He bit on the key with all his strength, paying no attention to the pain he was causing himself. As the key turned around, he turned around the lock with it, holding himself upright only with his mouth, and hung onto the key and pushed it down again with the whole weight of his body. The clear sound of the lock, as it snapped back, was Gregor's sign that he could break his concentration. And as he regained his breath, he said to himself, "So I didn't need the locksmith after all." Then he laid his head on the handle of the door to open it completely. Because he had to open the door in this way, it was already wide open before he could be seen. He had to first slowly turn himself around one of the double doors, and he had to do it very carefully if he did not want to fall flat on his back before entering the room. He was still occupied with this difficult movement, unable to pay attention to anything else, when he heard the chief clerk exclaim aloud, "Oh!" which sounded like the sign of the wind. Now Gregor also saw him. The chief clerk was the nearest to the door. His hand pressed against his open mouth and slowly retreating, as if driven by a steady and invisible force. Gregor's mother, her hair still disheveled from the bed, despite the chief clerk's being there, looked at his father. Then she unfolded her arms, took two steps forward towards Gregor, and sank down onto the floor into her skirts that spread themselves out around her as her head disappeared down onto her breast. His father looked hostile and clenched his fist as if wanting to knock Gregor back into his room. Then he looked uncertainly around the living room, covered his eyes with his hands, and wept so that his powerful chest shook. So Gregor did not go into the room, but leaned against the inside of the other door, which was still held bolted in place. Only half of his body could be seen, along with his head above it, which he leaned over to one side as he peered out at the others. Meanwhile, the day had become much lighter. Part of the endless gray-black building on the other side of the street, which was a hospital, could be seen quite clearly with the austere and regular line of windows piercing its facade. The rain was still falling, throwing down large individual droplets that hit the ground one at a time. The washing up from breakfast lay on the table. There was so much of it, because, for Gregor's father, breakfast was the most important meal of the day, and he would stretch it out for several hours as he sat reading a number of different newspapers. On the opposite wall, there was a photograph of Gregor when he was a lieutenant in the army, his sword in his hand, and a carefree smile on his face as he reflected the respect for his uniform and his stature. The door to the entrance hall was open. Since the front door of the flat was also open, he could see the landing and the stairs where they began their way down below. "Now then," said Gregor, well aware that he was the only one to have kept calm. "I'll get dressed right away, pack up my samples, and set off. Will you please just let me leave?" "You can see," he said to the chief clerk, "that I'm not stubborn, and I like to do my job. Being a commercial traveler is arduous, but without traveling, I couldn't earn my living." "So where are you going? Into the office?" "Yes." "Will you report everything accurately then?" "It's quite possible for someone to be temporarily unable to work, but that's just the right time to remember what's been achieved in the past, and to consider that later on, once the difficulty has been removed, he will certainly work with all the more diligence and concentration. You're well aware that I'm seriously in debt to our employer, as well as having to look after my parents and my sister. So I'm trapped in a difficult situation, but I will work my way out of it again. Please don't make things any harder for me than they already are, and don't take sides against me at the office. I know that nobody likes the travelers. They think we earn an enormous wage, as well as having a soft time. That's just prejudice, but they have no particular reason to think this way. But you, sir, you have a better overview than the rest of the staff. In fact, if I could say this in confidence, a better overview than the boss himself. It's very easy for a businessman like him to make mistakes about his employees and judge them more harshly than he should. You're also well aware that we travelers spend almost the whole year away from the office, so we very easily fall victim to gossip and groundless complaints. It's almost impossible to defend yourself from that sort of thing. We usually don't even hear about them, or if we do, it's after we arrive back home exhausted from a trip. That's when we feel the harmful effects of what's been going on without even knowing what caused them. Please don't go away. At least, first say something to show that I'm at least partly right. But the chief clerk had turned away as soon as Gregor had started to speak, and with protruding lips, only stared back at him over his trembling shoulders as he left. He did not keep still for 1 second while Gregor was speaking, but moved steadily towards the door without taking his eyes off him. He moved very gradually, as if there was some secret prohibition on leaving the room. It was only when he had reached the entrance hall that he made a sudden movement, drew his foot from the living room, and rushed forward in a panic. In the hall, he stretched his right hand towards the stairway as if there were some supernatural force waiting to save him outside. Gregor realized that it was out of the question to let the chief clerk go away in this mood if his position in the firm was not to be put into extreme danger. That was something his parents did not understand very well. Over the years, they had become convinced that his job would provide for Gregor his entire life, and besides, they had so much to worry about that they had lost sight of any thought for the future. Gregor, though, did not think about the future. The chief clerk had to be held back, calmed down, convinced, and finally won over. The future of Gregor and his family depended on it. If only his sister were here. She was clever. She was already in tears while Gregor was still lying peacefully on his back. The chief clerk was a lover of women. Surely she could persuade him. She would close the front door in the entrance hall and talk him out of his shocked state. But his sister was not there. Gregor would have to do the job himself. Without considering that he was still unfamiliar with how well he could move around in his present state, or that his speech still might not, or probably would not, be understood, he let go of the door, pushed himself through the opening, tried to reach the chief clerk on the landing, who ridiculously was holding on to the banister with both hands. Gregor immediately fell, and with a little scream as he sought something to hold on to, landed on his numerous little legs. Hardly had that happened than for the first time that day, he began to feel all right with his body. The little legs had the solid ground under them. To his pleasure, they did exactly as he told them. They were even making the effort to carry him where he wanted to go, and he was now believing that all his sorrows would soon finally be at an end. He held back the urge to move, but swayed from side to side as he crouched there on the floor. His mother was not far away in front of him, and seemed at first quite engrossed in herself. But then, she suddenly jumped up with her arms outstretched and her fingers spread, shouting, "Help! For pity's sake, help!" The way she held her head suggested she wanted to see Gregor better. But the unthinking way she was backing away from him showed that she did not. She had forgotten that the table was behind her with all the breakfast things on it. When she reached the table, she sat quickly down without knowing what she was doing, without even seeming to notice that the coffee pot had been knocked over and a gush of coffee was pouring down onto the carpet. "Mother, mother," said Gregor gently, looking up at her. He had completely forgotten the chief clerk for the moment, but he could not help himself snapping in the air with his jaws at the sight of the flow of coffee. That set his mother screaming anew. She fled from the table and into the arms of his father as he rushed towards her. Gregor, though, had no time to spare for his parents now. The chief clerk had already reached the stairs. With his chin on the banister, he looked back for the last time. Gregor made a run for him. He wanted to be sure of reaching him. The chief clerk must have expected something, because he leapt down several steps at once and disappeared, his shouts resounding all around the staircase. The flight of the chief clerk seemed, unfortunately, to put Gregor's father into a panic as well. Until then, he had been relatively self-controlled. But now, instead of running after the chief clerk himself, or at least not impeding Gregor as he ran after him, Gregor's father seized the chief clerk's stick in his right hand. The chief clerk had left it behind on a chair, along with his hat and overcoat. Picked up a large newspaper from the table with his left, and used them to drive Gregor back into his room, stamping his foot at him as he went. Gregor's appeals to his father were of no help. His appeals were simply not understood, however much he humbly turned his head. His father merely stamped his foot all the harder. Across the room, despite the chilly weather, Gregor's mother had pulled open a window, leaned far out of it, and pressed her hands to her face. A strong gust of wind flew in from the street towards the stairway. The curtains flew up, the newspapers on the table fluttered, and some of them were blown onto the floor. Nothing would stop Gregor's father as he drove Gregor back, making hissing noises at Gregor like a wild man. Gregor did not have any practice in moving backwards, and was only able to move very slowly. If Gregor had only been allowed to turn around, he would have been back in his room right away. But he was afraid that if he took the time to do that, his father would become impatient, and there was the threat of a lethal blow to his back or head from the stick in his father's hand at any moment. Eventually, though, Gregor realized that he had no choice, to his disgust, that he was quite incapable of going backwards in a straight line. So he began to turn himself around, as quickly as possible, and with frequent anxious glances at his father. It went very slowly, but perhaps his father was able to see his good intentions, since he did nothing to hinder Gregor. In fact, now and then, and from a distance, he used the tip of his stick to give directions as to which way to turn. If only his father would stop that unbearable hissing. It was making Gregor quite confused. When he had nearly finished turning around, still listening to that hissing, he made a mistake and slightly turned himself back the way he had just come. He was pleased when he finally had his head in front of the doorway, but then saw that it was too narrow and his body was too broad to get through it without difficulty. In his present mood, it obviously did not occur to his father to open both double doors so that Gregor would have enough space to get through. He was merely fixed on the idea that Gregor should be got back into his room as quickly as possible. Nor did he allow Gregor the time to upright himself so he could get through the doorway. What he did, making more noise than ever, was to drive Gregor forward all the harder, as if there had been nothing in the way. It sounded to Gregor as if there was more than one father behind him. It was not a pleasant experience, and Gregor pushed himself into the doorway without regard for what might happen. One side of his body lifted itself. He lay at an angle in the doorway. One flank scraped on the white door and was painfully injured, leaving vile brown flecks on it. Soon he was stuck fast and could not move at all by himself. The little legs along one side hung quivering in the air, while those on the other side pressed painfully against the ground. Then his father gave him a hefty shove from behind, which released him and sent him flying, heavily bleeding, deep into his room. The door was slammed shut with the stick. Then finally, all was quiet. Chapter 2. It was not until it was getting dark that evening that Gregor awoke from his deep and coma-like sleep. He would have woken soon afterwards anyway, even if he hadn't been disturbed, since he had had enough sleep and felt fully rested. Yet, he had the impression that some hurried steps and the sound of a carefully shut door leading into the front room had woken him. The light from the electric street lamps shone palely onto the ceiling and tops of the furniture. But down below, where Gregor was, it was dark. He pushed himself over to the door, feeling his way clumsily with his antenna. He was beginning to learn their value, in order to see what had been happening there. The whole of his left side seemed like one painfully stretched gar, and he limped badly on his two rows of legs. One of the legs had been badly injured in the morning's events. It was a miracle that only one of his legs had been injured, as it dragged along lifelessly. It was only when he had reached the door that he realized what actually drew him there. It was the smell of something to eat. By the door, there was a dish filled with sweetened milk and with little pieces of white bread floating in it. He was so pleased he almost laughed, as he was even hungrier than he had been that morning. He immediately dipped his head into the milk, nearly covering his eyes with it. But he soon drew his head back in disappointment. Not only did the pain in his tender left side make it difficult to eat the food, he was only able to eat if his whole body worked together as a snuffling whole. But the milk did not taste good. Milk like this was normally his favorite drink, and his sister had certainly left it there for him because of that. But he turned, almost against his own will, away from the dish and crawled back into the center of the room. Through the crack in the door, Gregor could see that the gas had been lit in the living room. His father at this time would normally sit with his evening paper, reading it out loud to Gregor's mother, and sometimes to his sister. But now, there was not a sound to be heard. Gregor's sister would often write and tell him about this reading, but maybe his father had lost the habit in recent times. It was so quiet all around, too, even though there must have been somebody in the flat. "What a quiet life it is the family leads," said Gregor to himself, and gazing into the darkness, felt a great pride that he was able to provide a life like that in such a nice home for his sister and parents. But what now, if all this peace and wealth and comfort should come to a horrible and frightening end? That was something Gregor did not want to think about, so he started to move around, crawling up and down the room. Once during that long evening, the door on one side of the room was opened slightly and hurriedly closed again. Later on, the door on the other side did the same. It seemed that someone wanted to enter the room, but thought better of it. Gregor went and waited by the door, resolved either to bring the fearful visitor into his room in some way, or at least to find out who it was. But the door was opened no more that night, and Gregor waited in vain. The previous morning, when the doors were locked, everyone wanted to come in. But now that he had opened up one of the doors, and the other had clearly been unlocked sometime during the day, no one came, and the keys were on the other sides of the doors. It was not until late at night that the gas light in the living room was put out. And now it was easy to see that his parents and sister had stayed awake all that time, since they could be distinctly heard as they went away together on tiptoe. It was clear that no one would come into Gregor's room any more until morning. That gave him plenty of time to think undisturbed about how he would have to rearrange his life. For some reason, the tall, empty room where he was forced to remain made him feel uneasy as he lay there flat on the floor, even though he had been living in it for 5 years. Hardly aware of what he was doing, other than a slight feeling of shame, he hurried under the couch. It pressed down on his back a little, and he no longer was able to lift his head. He nonetheless felt immediately at ease, and his only regret was that his body was too broad to get it all underneath. He spent the whole night there. Some of the time, he passed in a light sleep, although he frequently woke from it in an alarm because of his hunger, and some of the time was spent in worries and vague hopes, which, however, always led to the same conclusion. For the time being, he must remain calm. He must show patience and the greatest consideration so that his family could bear the unpleasantness that he, in his present condition, was forced to impose on them. Gregor soon had the opportunity to test the strength of his decisions. Early the next morning, almost before the night had ended, his sister, nearly fully dressed, opened the door from the front room and looked anxiously in. She did not see him right away, but when she did notice him under the couch, he had to be somewhere for God's sake. He couldn't have flown away. She was so shocked that she lost control of herself and slammed the door shut again from the outside. But she seemed to regret her behavior, because she opened the door again right away and came in on tiptoe, as if entering the room of someone seriously ill, or even of a stranger. Gregor had pushed his head forward, right to the edge of the couch, and watched her. Would she notice that he had left the milk as it was, realize that it was not from any lack of hunger, and bring him in some other food that was more suitable? If she didn't do it herself, he would rather go hungry than draw attention to it. Although he did feel a terrible urge to rush forward from under the couch, throw himself at his sister's feet, and beg her for something good to eat. However, his sister noticed the full dish immediately and looked at it, and the few drops of milk splashed around it with some surprise. She immediately picked it up, using a rag, not her bare hands, and carried it out. Gregor was extremely curious what she would bring in its place, imagining the wildest possibilities. But he never could have guessed what his sister, in her goodness, actually did bring in. In order to test his taste, she brought him a whole selection of things, all spread out on an old newspaper. There were old half-rotten vegetables, bones from the evening meal, covered in white sauce that had gone hard, a few raisins and almonds, some cheese that Gregor had declared inedible 2 days before, a dry roll and some bread, spread with butter and salt. As well as all that, she had poured some water into the dish, which had probably been permanently set aside for Gregor's use, and placed it beside them. Then, out of consideration for Gregor's feeling, as she knew that he would not eat in front of her, she hurried out again and even turned the key in the lock, so that Gregor would know that he could make things as comfortable for himself as he liked. Gregor's little legs whirled. At last, he could eat. What's more, his injuries must already have completely healed, as he found no difficulty in moving. This amazed him, as more than a month earlier, he had cut his finger slightly with a knife. He thought of how his finger had still hurt the day before yesterday. "Am I less sensitive than I used to be?" he thought, and was already sucking greedily at the cheese which had immediately and almost compellingly attracted him much more than the other foods on the newspaper. Quickly, one after another, his eyes watering with pleasure, he consumed the cheese, the vegetables, and the sauce. The fresh foods, on the other hand, he didn't like at all, and even dragged the things he did want to eat a little away from them because he couldn't stand the smell. Long after he had finished eating and lay lethargic in the same place, his sister slowly turned the key in the lock as a sign to him that he should withdraw. He was immediately startled, although he had been half asleep, and he hurried back under the couch. But he needed a lot of self-control to stay there, even for the short time that his sister was in the room, since eating so much food had rounded out his body, and he could hardly breathe in that narrow space. Half suffocating, he watched with bulging eyes as his sister unself-consciously took a broom and swept up the leftovers, mixing them in with the food he had not even touched at all, as if it could not be used anymore. She quickly dropped it all into the bin, closed it with its wooden lid, and carried everything out. She had hardly turned her back before Gregor came out again from under the couch and stretched himself out. This was how Gregor received his food each day now, once in the morning while his parents and the maid were still asleep, and the second time after everyone had eaten their meal at midday, since his parents would take a short nap, and Gregor's sister would send the maid away on some errand. Gregor's father and mother certainly did not want him to starve either, but perhaps it would have been more than they could stand to have any more experience of his feeding than being told about it. And perhaps his sister wanted to spare them any more distress, since they were indeed suffering enough. It was impossible for Gregor to find out what they had told the doctor and the locksmith that first morning to get them out of the flat, since nobody could understand him. Nobody, not even his sister. He had to be content to hear his sister's sighs and appeals to the saints as she moved about his room. It was only later, when she had become a little more used to everything. There was, of course, no question of her ever becoming fully used to the situation, that Gregor would sometimes catch a friendly comment, or at least a comment that could be construed as friendly. He enjoyed his dinner today, she might say, when he had diligently cleared away all the food left for him. Or, if he left most of it, which slowly became more and more frequent, she would often say, sadly, "Now everything's just been left there again." Although Gregor wasn't able to hear any news directly, he did listen to much of what was said in the next rooms, and whenever he heard anyone speaking, he would scurry straight to the appropriate door and press his whole body against it. There was seldom any conversation, especially at first, that was not about him in some way, even if only in secret. For 2 whole days, all the talk at every meal was about what they should do now. Even between meals, they spoke about the same subject, since there were always at least 2 members of the family at home. Nobody wanted to be at home by themselves, and it was out of the question to leave the flat entirely empty. On the very first day, the maid had fallen to her knees and begged Gregor's mother to let her go without delay. It was not very clear how much she knew about what happened, but she left within a quarter of an hour, tearfully thanking Gregor's mother for her dismissal, as if she had done her an enormous service. She even swore emphatically not to tell anyone the slightest thing about what had happened, even though no one had asked her to do that. Now, Gregor's sister also had to help his mother with the cooking, although that was not so much bother, as no one ate very much. Gregor often heard how one of them would unsuccessfully urge another to eat, and receive no more answer than, "No thanks, I've had enough," or something similar. No one drank very much either. His sister would sometimes ask his father whether he would like a beer, hoping for the chance to go and fetch it herself. When his father then said nothing, she would add, so that he would not feel selfish, that she could send the housekeeper for it. But then his father would close the matter with a big loud no, and no more would be said. Even before the first day had come to an end, his father had explained to Gregor's mother and sister what their finances and prospects were. Now and then he stood up from the table and took some receipt or document from the little cash box he had received from his business when it had collapsed 5 years earlier. Gregor heard how he opened the complicated lock and then closed it again after he had taken the item he wanted. What he heard his father say was some of the first good news that Gregor heard since he had first been incarcerated in his room. He had thought that nothing at all remained from his father's business. At least, he had never told him anything different, and Gregor had never asked him about it anyway. Their business misfortune had reduced the family to a state of total despair, and Gregor's only concern at the time had been to arrange things so that they could all forget about it as quickly as possible. So then, as he started working especially hard, with a fiery vigor that raised him from a junior salesman to a traveling representative almost overnight, bringing with it the chance to earn money in quite different ways. Gregor converted his success at work straight into cash that he could lay it on the table at home for the benefit of his astonished and delighted family. There had been good times, and they had never come again, at least not with the same splendor. Even though Gregor had later earned so much that he was in a position to bear the cost of the whole family, and did bear them. They had even got used to it, both Gregor and his family. They took the money with gratitude, and he was glad to provide it, although there was no longer much warm affection given in return. Gregor remained close only to his sister now. Unlike him, she was very fond of music and a gifted and expressive violinist. It was his secret plan to send her to the conservatory next year, even though it would be a great expense that would have to be made up for in some other way. During Gregor's short periods in town, conversation with his sister would often turn to the conservatory, but it was mentioned only as a lovely dream that could never be realized. Their parents did not like to hear this innocent talk, but Gregor thought about it a lot and decided he would let them know what he planned with a grand announcement of it on Christmas Day. That was a sort of totally pointless thing that went through his mind in his present state, pressed upright against the door and listening. There were times when he simply became too tired to continue listening, when his head would fall wearily against the door, and he would pull it up again with a start, as even the slightest noise he caused would be heard next door, and they would all go silent. "What is that he's doing now?" his father would say after a while, clearly having gone over to the door, and only then would the interrupted conversation slowly be taken up again. When explaining things, his father repeated himself several times, partly because it was a long time since he had been occupied with these matters himself, and partly because Gregor's mother did not understand everything the first time. From these repeated explanations, Gregor learned, to his pleasure, that despite all their misfortunes, there was still some money available from the old days. It was not a lot, but it had not been touched in the meantime, and some interest had accumulated. Besides that, they had not been using up all the money that Gregor had been bringing home every month, keeping only a little for himself, so that too had been accumulating. Gregor nodded with enthusiasm in his pleasure at this unexpected thrift and caution. He actually could have used this surplus money to reduce his father's debt to his boss, and the day when he could have freed himself from that job would have come much sooner. But now it was certainly better the way his father had done things. This money, however, was certainly not enough to enable the family to live off the interest. It was enough to maintain them for perhaps 1 or 2 years, no more. That is to say, it was money that should not really be touched, but set aside for emergencies. Money to be lived on still needed to be earned. His father was healthy, but old and lacking in self-confidence. During the 5 years that he had not been working, the first holiday in a life that had been full of strain and no success, he had put on a lot of weight and became very slow and clumsy. Would Gregor's elderly mother now have to go and earn money? She suffered from asthma, and it was a strain for her just to move about the home. Every other day would be spent struggling for breath on the sofa by the open window. Would his sister have to go and earn money? She was still a child of 17. Her life up until then had been very enviable, consisting of wearing nice clothes, sleeping late, helping out in the business, joining in with a few modest pleasures, and most of all, playing the violin. Whenever they began to talk of the need to earn money, Gregor would always first let go of the door and then throw himself onto the cool leather sofa next to it, as he became quite hot with the shame and regret. He would often lie there the whole night through, not sleeping a wink, but scratching at the leather for hours on end. Or he might go to all the effort of pushing a chair to the window, climbing up onto the sill, and propped up in the chair, leaning on the window to stare out of it. He used to feel a great sense of freedom from doing this, but doing it now was obviously something more remembered than experienced. Even what he actually saw in this way was becoming less distinct every day, even things that were quite near. He used to curse the ever-present view of the hospital across the street, but now he could not see it at all. And if he had not known that he lived in Charlottenstrasse, which was a quiet street despite being in the middle of the city, he could have thought that he was looking out the window at a barren waste where the gray sky and the gray earth mingled inseparably. His observant sister only needed to notice the chair twice before she would always push it back to the exact position by the window after she had tidied up the room, and even left the inner pane of the window open from then on. If Gregor had only been able to speak to his sister and thank her for all that she had to do for him, it would have been easier for him to bear it. But as it was, it caused him pain. His sister, naturally, tried, as far as possible, to pretend there was nothing burdensome about it. And the longer it went on, of course, the better she was able to do so. But as time went by, Gregor was also able to see through it all much better. It had even become very unpleasant for him now, whenever she entered the room. No sooner would she come in than she would quickly close the door as a precaution that no one would have to suffer the view into Gregor's room. Then she would go straight to the window and pull it hurriedly open, almost as if she were suffocating. Even if it was cold, she would stay at the window, breathing deeply for a little while. She would alarm Gregor twice a day with this running about and noisemaking. He would stay under the couch, shivering the whole time, knowing full well that she would certainly have liked to spare him this ordeal. But it was impossible for her to be in the same room with him with the windows closed.